Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go! Happy Thursday, everybody, and welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast brought to you by Traeger Grills. Listen, wood-fired food is the way Mother Nature intended cooking to be. Cooking over a fire, it's what makes us human. And simply, it tastes better. I love my Traeger grill. It uses 100% all natural hardwood fuel to infuse my food with a healthy, flavorful layer of natural smoke. If you like smoked wings, you're going to love the taste of any smoked wood fire food. I would much rather have the flavor of my food be some type of rich cherry, oak, hickory, wood-fired smoke over some gas and charcoal. Guys, I'm telling you, if you ask any barbecue enthusiast or barbecue pro, they're going to tell you, taste the Traeger difference. Find your local dealer today by visiting TraegerGrill.com/ACC. And once you've browsed their site, once you've selected your fire-breathing pellet grill, use our code ACCSports for free shipping on your entire order.
Let's go. Is there anything better in the world than free shipping? Come on.
No.
Free shipping
not.
Is the best.
And it's a grill, so that's a big thing to ship. So come on, think about it.
Exactly right. That's excellent stuff, Mac. All right, it's time for our guest of the week. It is Luke Hancock. He will forever be in the history books as the most outstanding player of the 2013 Final Four when his Louisville Cardinals won the national championship. Luke is a native of Roanoke, Virginia, and began his career at George Mason under current Miami coach Jim Larrañaga. He transferred to Louisville and played his final 2 years for the Cardinals. In the 2013 Final Four, he was on fire, scoring 20 points and hitting three threes versus Wichita State in the semis, and then putting up 22 points and going 5 for 5 from the three-point line in the national title game versus Michigan.
Yeah, this guy is lights out. Luke played pro basketball overseas before coming back to the United States to start. Guess what? Life after basketball. There's always life after our sports that we play. He is now one of the busiest people in the sporting world. He serves as a college basketball analyst for ACC Network. He also serves as the co-host of The Drive on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, ESPN Louisville with Mark Ennis. And guys, there's so much. I'm so happy that this guy made time for us to join the podcast. He is a financial advisor with Clear Path Financial of Raymond James in Louisville. This guy literally does it all.
He has some great stories, which y'all are going to hear and love, and is the perfect person to break down the current state of ACC hoops. So let's get to it.
This week's guest is brought to you by Traeger Grills. Welcome to the Traegerhood.
Luke Hancock, my friend, welcome to the show. First of all, so excited to have you on. We really appreciate your time. Because I know you're one of the busiest guys out there. I'm not even going to say sports because you dip your toe in everything. Will you tell our listeners and probably a lot of the Louisville fans who are listening what in the world you are up to and your like 7 jobs that you have?
I don't know about 7, but I try to stay busy. I was very fortunate and blessed to get the opportunity to come on with ESPN. And you guys were the first kind of crew I met. And I remember EMAC just like full force trying to bull rush his way into basketball. And he was like, you guys need anybody to fill in? You need somebody to do this, do that? I am your guy. I think he was even trying to go hit the court over there at ESPN to really test out that jump shot early on. But I certainly remember getting to ESPN. And I don't know if you guys had the same feelings I did, but I was extremely nervous. That day, I just had no idea what to expect. And like you grow up loving ESPN and just not having been there and met anybody, I was super intimidated. I also haven't done TV before, I've done the radio show with Mark Ennis on 93.9 The Ville for a couple years at that point. But it was a different challenge. It was fun. And just the people you meet up there are fantastic. So on the sports side, I kind of have a full plate. But again, this year in the crazy pandemic, you know, you're not traveling up to Bristol, Connecticut every weekend. So it does make things a little easier in that regard, walking to the basement and just, you know,
you got to put on the suit and tie. I have worn pants every time, but I will say that's the question you get. That's what you get from, maybe it speaks more to my friends than anything else, but the text message you get is, are you wearing pants? Because they can only see you from the waist up.
Every single time, Luke, and here's the deal. I was like you, you know, the first probably 8-9 weeks of the season, I wore pants. And then for what some, I don't know if I was like rushing or what, but I just put on shorts like week 10 or 11. And then I was like, whoa, this is a game changer. Because, you know, we're sitting around all day long. And, oh, man, it's such a hard job. We're sitting around all day long. If I'm not in dress pants for, you know, 12, 14 straight hours, I'm living my best life. And so after week 11, things vastly changed. Good for you if you keep it up. But I'm just telling you, when you put those basketball shorts on, it's going to change, you know, your entire life. Look, before we jump into ACC hoops, I want to focus on your glory days and really your playing career. You began at George Mason playing for current Miami coach, Jim Larrañaga. How was that? How was that playing for coach there and now seeing him at Miami?
Yeah. So funny story about my recruitment with Coach Larrañaga. I was playing at Hargrave Military Academy for Kevin Keats and A.W. Hamilton and Chad Myers. It's in Chatham, Virginia. And it's about a four and a half hour drive from George Mason. Well, some of the assistants had come to see me play, and I played fantastic. And we had a really good team. We had Maurice Creek was going to Indiana, and we had Sean Painter was committed to Florida, and we had Evan Gordon, Eric Gordon's little brother, who ended up playing at Indiana. We had a really good team. We had a bunch of guys that went Division I, I think 12 of us. And I played great this first day. Great. Scoring, was playing defense, passed the ball well, you know, you're kind of doing a little bit of everything. Well, all the assistant, or the first assistant came, that was the first day. Then he's like, all right, I got to bring back a couple more guys because I don't know if he wanted to give the full stamp of approval. So he brings back the other assistants. And again, I have a great day. Play fantastic. I'm going up against these high major guys. You know, I feel like I'm ready to go play college. And then they're like, we got to bring the man back. We got to bring Coach L in. Coach L comes in. And for some reason, Maurice Creek had it in his head that he was not going to let me score a dang point all day. We played for like 3 hours. I think I shot one jump shot. This dude was me. I mean, I couldn't get away from him. He killed me the whole day. I knew I didn't play well. I had a frustrating day. And this was kind of like, I'm going to get the opportunity. And Coach L told me afterwards, he's like, you know, my assistants have been raving about you, man. And I just, you didn't do all that much today. And I was like, yeah, you know, I had a bad day and, you know, I'm a work hard kind of thing. You know, I don't know what you're supposed to say to that, but I was like, you know, whatever, I'm gonna figure it out. So I figured it was a done deal. And he called me a couple of days later and he was like, you know, honestly, I didn't see enough, but my assistants love you and I trust them, put a lot of faith in those guys. So I want you to come to campus. We don't offer guys unless they come to campus. So you come check us out and tell us what you think. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to come up there and check school out and play great on my visit too. Play fantastic on my visit, but Coach L couldn't watch that either because you can't watch the group play. So he's kind of heard all this stuff, but he never really saw me play well before, you know, he offered me and I ended up committing to George Mason. And then I joined with five other freshmen. It was one of the best recruiting classes George Mason ever had. And I was at the very bottom of that totem pole. Everybody kind of said I might redshirt. And I just trusted Coach L's system. And to be honest, they were hesitant. But, I, you know, in those preseason scrimmages and just the work you put in early, he saw that and just kind of led me down the right path. And I remember early on, we're playing Indiana down in Puerto Rico in an early tournament. And almost had a triple-double in the game, and coach is liking everything I'm doing. And he's like, I don't want to start you because I don't want you to think that you've made it. Mm. And I was just like, at the time, I'm like, well, dang, if I'm one of the best five, like, you know, start me, put me in a game, coach. And it was such a great lesson. And I have so many stories like that of Coach L, just being a teacher of young men. And yes, he's a great basketball coach, but what a good person. I love my time at George Mason.
That's awesome. I love to hear that story. And actually, there was a little bit of maybe another story kind of woven in there. I heard you say Coach Kevin Keats at VMI, who I think was also at Louisville. Is that how you kind of got Hargrave? Excuse me. Is that kind of how you got to Louisville? Was Coach Keats seeing you and having you there and then moving on to Louisville?
Yeah, I don't know how long we're going to be on this podcast. This is another So I'm.
It's crazy how you are connected to so many of these coaches in this league. It's really crazy.
It is wild. Obviously, the Louisville connection, but I played. Coach Boeheim chose our team for one of the Team USA teams, and I've played for a few of the guys in this league, and have a bunch of ties to Virginia Tech. So it is kind of wild. I've gotten my butt kicked by a lot of the coaches in the ACC too.
Too humble, Luke.
Yeah. No, they did a lot of whipping. I never got Carolina. Duke beat me up. There's a bunch of them. Notre Dame. But so with Coach Keats, I had a conversation with Coach Larinag, and I've never been one of those, like, how could you leave that school? Like, you left us. No, that's not me. He had a great opportunity at Miami to get back to the ACC. He coached at Virginia, a couple decades ago. And I knew he wanted to get back there. And so he took a great opportunity. But the night before he took that opportunity, I call him and I'm saying, Coach, I hear all these rumors. I hear that you're leaving. Like, just what's going on? And he's like, this happens all the time. We had a great year. We won the most games in school history as a sophomore. So he's like, this is usually just trying to get more resources for the program, help out my assistants, kind of the whole, year coach speak all the time. And so the next day I find out on a press conference, he's gone. So all that was a little, coach speak to me, but I love the guy. And my first call is to Kevin Keats. And so I'm talking to Coach Keats, and the first thing he says, I don't even say hello. He says, so your coach left you, huh? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to stay. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I need a little help here. I need a little guidance. And he's like, well, do this. Like, send me your list of schools. Give me 10 schools, and I'll start the conversations, and we'll work through this. So I'm like, great. My dad was a CPA. He's always been big on using basketball as a tool to get you where you want to go in life. And that's the best advice I've gotten. And so I start putting down like great academic school, Northwestern. I put Harvard on there. And I was like, if basketball can help me get into one of those, like, that's where I'm going to go. And Coach Keats is like, we got to cross some of these off the list. He's like, basketball's not good enough here. We started mixing up stuff. Clemson was actually on that list, and so was South Carolina. And,
what could have been?
Could have changed history. Could have changed our history, but whatever. Whatever. Keep going.
Every Clemson fan listening was like.
Hey, my experiences at Clemson have been a lot of fun, so I think I would have had a blast down there if I could have, focused in. But I talked to Coach Keats every day for like a week, nonstop. And all of a sudden, he's completely dark. I don't hear from him for like a good 10 days. And I'm sending this man text messages. I wish I could pull him up. He's ghosting me. And so come to find out, he gets the job at Louisville and he doesn't want any kind of tampering violations, right? Because if you're a college coach in another school, he doesn't have my release. So finally, he's like, if you want to talk, you got to get your release to me. So I went and got it. The administration at George Mason, they had a bunch of great people. The only thing they said was, we want you to meet the new coach. If you'll do that for us, we'll help you do whatever you want. But they wouldn't let me go to anybody I was playing the next year, George Mason was, or anyone in conference. So Virginia would have been a little tougher because they were playing them next year, but that was definitely on my list as well. Tony Bennett kind of starting out there. But he's like, I'm not telling you have to come to school here, but if I tell Coach P about you, Coach Pitino, like, you have to take a visit if he likes you. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm in. They're preseason number 4 in the country. There's a senior who plays the 3-4 spot in Kyle Keurig. Like, this is lining up. And once I took my visit, talked to Coach Pitino, it was over. I knew where I wanted to be and knew the opportunity, really, coming to Louisville. And it just kind of all fell together. I mean, one conversation we had, I'm thinking I'm coming from a small school trying to see if I'm going to be able to play in the Big East in its prime. And I told Coach, like, I want to play. I don't want to come here and sit on the bench. Like, I want to play significantly. And he's like, Luke, I'm too old, too far into my career to take a chance on someone that I know isn't going to work out. He looked at me dead in the eyes. And he said, you're going to be a big part of us winning a national championship.
Wow.
Wow.
How about that?
I mean, in my head, I was like, sign. Where do I sign? Like, I'm ready to go.
Right.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but I'm pretty sure I slow played it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to think about it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I would have signed right there for sure.
That's awesome.
That incredible stories there. Incredible stories there, Luke. And yeah, I know you have some good stories. I've heard some of them back when we could all hang out in the studio. But These are excellent. So let's talk about Louisville. All right. And then we're going to get into the current ACC a little bit as well. But you played with some dudes at Louisville. You talk about going from George Mason to the Big East. Russ Smith, Peyton Siva, Montrezl Harrell, Terry Rozier, your last year, Scary Terry. What were these practices like? I mean, they had to have just been elite.
You know, there was one position who didn't have the same level of competition. This isn't a knock on any of those other guys, but, you know, Gorgie Jang, who signed for a big old contract with Minnesota, is now with Memphis. He was like the anchor of our team, and nobody was messing with Big G. You know, he's a 7-footer. He can shoot it. He could pass. He was just an incredible player. But the rest of the matchups through my time at Louisville were awesome. You know, Shane Bohannon as a freshman was awesome. He was lights out. He got much better. He comes back as a sophomore, and Montrezl Harrell steps in. And so there were so many days in practice where it doesn't really matter what coach is trying to run here. Like, we're going to throw the ball in, and everybody's going to space out, and we're going to let these two just work out. And the battles were so good. And I'll tell you, man, Shane Bohannon really put him, I mean, through the cleaners when he was first there, when Montrezl was first there. And then Montrezl just shows who he is and how much fight he has. And you start to see him just blocking a shot here and catching a tip dunk here. And then it's like, man, this guy's starting to put it together. And it just, that competition made those guys blow up. And then, you know, Russ Smith and Terry Rozier, I mean, you can imagine those scoring battles. It was pretty incredible to watch those guys. Myself and Wayne Blackshear was Mr. Basketball in the state of Chicago over Anthony Davis. I mean, he was a big time recruit coming in. So practices were so intense, and it's Rick Pitino. So there's no way you can't show up every day ready to go. Those battles just that's made us who we were. And, you know, the best thing about our team is we could be 10 deep. We had so many guys that practices were awesome. And our second team, which I was sixth man that year, our second team would beat up on the first team one day or one week, and they would come back and beat up on us. And it just changed all the time. And those competitions every day made us great.
That's tremendous. Did Trez have the same swag that he does now? Was he kind of a crazy dresser? Dude had every pair of Jordans possible, or was he kind of under the radar?
Man, I'll tell you this. Trez and I used to share shoes. So like you're a broke college kid, and you know, we always wanted to have something a little bit different, right? So the crazy eights, those Kobes, we tried to get the colorways that would match whatever uniform. So we had the gray and white ones for the home, and then we had the black and red ones for the away games. Well, I wore a 13 and Trez wore a 14. So every time he'd be like, "Let me borrow your kicks," I would get them back, and they just feel so stretched out. They're like two sizes bigger. But we would trade shoes kind of back and forth. Now I think he's probably got, you know, 5,000 pairs of all different kinds of shoes for sure. He says he's got a room and a storage unit and all this stuff for all his gear. But I'll tell you this, Trez was the toughest teammate I've ever had. And what I mean is Trez is so intense. And he's got this shell of just like, I'm a badass and nobody's going to mess with me and I'm not taking anything from anybody. And so there were so many times where it's like, you know, you don't have to win that battle. That's not what we're focused on as a team. We're over here trying to work on something or just like leave that poor freshman alone. Like you're over here dunking on him and screaming at him and punching him in the head every 2 seconds, like relax a little bit. And that's just not him. So trying to get him to focus in a little bit more on the big picture early was tough, but I'll tell you this, I've never had a guy, you know, to go into battle with that I would rather have on my side, because Trez gave max effort at all times. He was obviously a baller, but if he's on your team, you know, he's got your back no matter what. And so that motivated me, like I've got his back, you know, we're going to do big things together. And his improvement every day, every week, every month was as good as I have ever seen from any player. He and Terry Rozier, as far as like development, every time you saw them, they looked like they were getting better.
And I think that still carries true today with both those guys in their NBA careers, and seeing the steps that, you know, Scary Terry and Trez have made with their respective teams. Let's talk a little bit about 2013, the Final Four. I mean, you were on absolute fire in that first game, you know, dropping 20 points And then, of course, in the championship game, Louisville's down 12. You hit 14 straight. I think you were 5 for 5, didn't miss a shot. Eventually get named MOP. What was that like? I mean, were you just in a zone? I mean, was it a...
That's everyone's dream.
Yeah, well, was it an out-of-body experience? I mean, are you playing 2K and that green light just keeps turning on? Like, what were those two games like?
Incredible. I think out-of-body experience is probably a good way to put it. You know, two kind of funny stories from this. Coach Larinaga, you know, most coaches go to the Final Four, especially high-profile coaches like him. And so he told me afterwards, he said, I was watching you in warmups and, you know, just trying to see what kind of night you were going to have. Man, you couldn't hit anything. I was like, dang, coach. He was like, man, your shot looked off. Like, you weren't doing anything out there. I said, I was getting my misses out. I was getting the bricks
out
of the way.
That's right.
And we joked for a little while. Look, but
that is so true, though, because there'd be warmups. And I don't know if you were like this, but there'd be warmups where I would make everything and I would think, oh, no.
It's a bad omen.
It's a bad
That's
timing.
That's not good. That's not good. So you want to miss a few in warmups, but continue, please. I'm not trying to compare my warmups to yours, but I'm just saying that could be a concern. If you're making everything, I'm like,
and playing in these, you know, football arenas, because we were in the dome in Atlanta where the Falcons were playing at the time. And so it was very different to shoot, and it was very different with fans in there and without fans in there. When you go and practice and everything, it just feels different. Obviously, that, you know, a lot of people in the arena, but we had been down a bunch that whole season, and that was kind of our style. Like, we're going to wear you down and eventually have enough left in the tank. We're going to pull ahead. And so Wichita State in that Final Four, man, they played, this is kind of gets played out, but the boulder on your shoulder, not a chip on your shoulder. They felt disrespected. They felt no one gave them credit. And man, that team was good. Clay Anthony Early and Ron and their point guard was tough. And they were just a well-rounded team, well-coached. And they felt like they deserved to be there, and they came out and punched us in the mouth. And luckily, Tim Henderson was a walk-on. He banked 2 threes in a row kind of later in that game in back-to-back possessions. And I just looked at that team, and I was like, we're going to win. We're going to win. No question at all. We're down 6 probably at that point. And the way they tightened up, I don't think – I may have these stats off a little bit. I don't think they had a turnover in the game with 10 minutes to go. And I think they finished with double-digit turnovers.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Because once they tightened up, we it gave us this just incredible confidence.
Yeah, swag,
we were so amped up, it was over.
You can see it in their eyes kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. Once they threw the first one away and somebody starts yelling at their teammate, and then you go over there and you're like, man, he stinks. You know, fire him up a little bit more. And it was over after that. And so when we were in the Michigan game, we were used to being down. You know, it wasn't anything, but these guys, elite talent, you know, they had the player of the year and Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway Jr., all-star level player now. And I mean, they had guy after guy.
Was that Stauskas as well?
Nick Stauskas, Caris LeVert was on that team. Al Horford's either nephew or little brother was their center. Who else? Oh, Glenn Robinson was on that team. He was crazy athletic. Like, they had a bunch of goons out there. They were great. And so we were kind of, I don't know, nervous isn't the right word because we'd been there, but we were on edge. And the funny thing is, coach calls a play, and he's like, Luke, if you move before the screen gets there, you're not going to play again the rest of this game. And I could do his New York accent. You're not going to play the rest of this game, son. I promise you. You're not going to play if you move before that screen gets there. So Nick Stauskas is guarding me, and of course he like has his arm kind of around me a little bit, and so I'm thinking I'm gonna pick up a foul, like he's kind of grabbing me, I'm just gonna, you know, sell this a little bit and go shoot 2 free throws. Well, I take off before the screen is there.
Oh no.
And luckily they run this double down for me, and I come out and catch it, I drive, and I get fouled. So I'm going to the free throw line. He can't take me out of the game.
Smart move. Very smart move.
He grills me in the timeout. I told you not to blah, blah, blah. Well, I go to the line. I make the 2 free throws. I think he did this just to mess with me, but he did make a sub and have someone at the table. Well, it wasn't for me. So we end up coming, and, you know, the next 3 or 4 possessions or something like that, I get an open look. I see Caris LeVert on me, who's a fantastic player. He's great. But it's just, you know, when you're a veteran and you see a freshman on you, it's like
about to eat. I'm about to eat. That's what you said.
So I nudge him a little bit and go off the screen, knock down the first one, almost the same spot, knock down the second one. And at that point, like, Kelly, you know this, you start shooting it and you made a few. It's like a really, it doesn't matter where this next catch comes from. And so, you know,
it's the best.
You make a couple more and then the rest is history, I guess.
And then you win a natty. Classic, Mac. You know, we've all been there.
And win a natty. Yeah. Hey, real quick, Luke, you said something that was really interesting kind of towards the beginning of that thought, and the sight lines and playing in these bigger arenas as a shooters. The three of us on this podcast right now, all three sharpshooters. Talk to everybody about just how different that is and why it's different when you're in these bigger arenas, depth perception, you know, all these things that come into play.
Well, we're going to test you out at some point. Kelly's certified.
Hey, she's seen it. She knows.
I think Matt needs to get on the block and rebound, but he wants to chuck threes. He can shoot it a little bit. I'll give it to him.
I like it. That sounds like old man basketball. Everybody go on the block. That's right. Like, no chance. It's you play in so many different environments throughout the year. I honestly didn't think that it was a big change, but honestly, you do see it. And you see it in percentages. Just every arena is so different, right? You're not playing in the Carrier Dome at Syracuse every time. You're certainly not playing in football arenas, pro football arenas with 80,000 people in that environment all the time. And when you get out there in these glass backboards, you know, you can see through them and fans are behind them and they're going crazy in all kinds of different ways and they're wearing different colors. And, you know, ultimately you tell yourself you go out there and the basket's the same height, and the free throw line's the same height, the court's the same dimensions and everything. But it does take you a while to get in rhythm in some of those big arenas. And you know, you go from doing your walkthrough in a high school gym, you know, in a tiny spot with no fans, no bleachers out, nothing. And then you go into that big of an arena, and it just makes everything feel different.
It does. Yeah. I had that experience at the Carrier Dome. We only played there once. It was right when Syracuse joined the ACC. And I did not like it. And to be honest, Luke, there weren't that many fans there. So I think
that's one of my favorite games at the Carrier Dome, getting to play. It was Michael Carter Williams' year. So they had a really good team. I'm pretty sure, I know they were top 10. I'm pretty sure they were like seventh maybe. And we were kind of right there as well. And it was incredible in that place. Loudest. I mean, so many people. It was nuts.
With fans, I bet it's amazing. Without, it is spooky. Like, it's flat out spooky. You're in a massive, and the Syracuse women are good, and they still don't draw. They maybe are drawing more now, but well, COVID, just kidding. But it's very odd. It's very odd. Okay. Before we talk about the league this year, I do have to ask this, Luke, because I'm just wondering, as a college basketball celebrity, right? What happens with college? And I'm you'll see where I'm going. So college basketball, you know, you have a new team every year. So eventually you're going to move on. People are going to move on to the next team. But when you do something like be the most valuable player of the Final Four, Louisville fans never, ever will forget that. So when you walk around Louisville, like, can you just walk somewhere and it's all good? Because you're a tall guy. You're taller than I thought.
Wait,
you were,
what does that mean? So, what do you mean? Taller than you thought?
You know
thought.
What I mean? Did you think Luke Hancock was 6'6"?
Whatever.
Not really. Anyway. Can you walk around Louisville without being stopped?
Certainly. Absolutely. I will say without
wearing your COVID mask.
You definitely not getting noticed with that on. But it kind of depends on where you're at. You know, if you go to a game, you're going to definitely say hello to people, stop and do all that. I avoid the malls at all costs. But Louisville has such a good basketball tradition, and so many people here grew up loving it. They appreciate, you know, winning a championship, especially one when you think about 1986 to 2013. It's a long break. And they've been close a few times, been to a couple Final Fours, but I think that our team is so admired and people love us because, you know, we were pretty open. People got to experience us all the time. It was kind of the start of when social media was really taking off, I guess, or people had more exposure to players. And we just had a bunch of really good guys. And, you know, you definitely get some attention every once in a while. But Louisville's such a easygoing town. You know, it's all super positive. So everybody asks if I ever have to pay for a beer in Louisville, and I say absolutely. All I did was hit a couple jump shots. They don't go buy you a drink every time you come out. Come on.
See, I figured in Louisville they would, because you know, Louisville's a drink.
Well, I'm not saying I never get a beer. Back. I'm just saying it doesn't happen every time.
Right, right. Come on. Because I've been to Louisville a good bit for basketball lately, and Mac, we have some mutual friends that live up there. So when this COVID is done, Mac and I are coming up there. I want to go to a speakeasy
with
Luke Hancock,
That's
see
right.
if I can get a free
You
got
to take us to the hospital.
Urban Trail?
That's going to be fun.
Oh, come on. We got, that's what Louisville's all about, man. We people have a great time. It's the best eating, drinking place you will ever go. We have the best restaurants.
I love going to Louisville.
There's obviously, we've got bourbon. And the way distilleries kind of entertain you and make it a process and make you, you know, enjoy it, it's a lot of fun.
Look, if we go to Louisville and we don't get something free between Luke Hancock and Eric Wood, I need better friends. I need bigger, better friends.
Oh,
I guess
that's right.
What it is.
We got to get E. Wood in here,
you
too.
You go out with Easy, he'll take care of you, number one. And then E. Wood's a big name in this city. They love him. And especially with the success Bills Mafia is having, you know, it's been really fun. I mean, think about this. The Bills donated like $360,000 to Blessings in a Backpack in like for Lamar Jackson. It makes you like, I don't have a dog in the fight anymore. I was rooting for the Ravens. I'm all over the Bills
right.
now. Like, it just makes you
right.
love them. Like,
it's amazing.
It was such a cool thing. And, you know, I don't know. He's such a great guy that I'm certainly rooting for the Bills the rest of the way.
That was really cool to see the Bills do that. They're incredible. I know you're a big Lamar Jackson fan as well, Luke.
So they played these Murder Bird helmets one time.
Those are
it's just unique.
Awesome.
You know, they actually, when it came out, like, people did not love them. And that's why they only did them for one game. They did it for the Auburn game. I get it. Like, it's very different, but Lamar signed that one. So it's a prized possession.
That's
it
cool.
was kind of his coming out party.
That's legit.
If you don't know what we're talking about, watch Luke next time on ACC Network and you'll see the Murder Bird helmet behind him. I always notice it. I think it's really cool. Okay, ACC hoops. This year, 2021, it's been an interesting year to say the least, with Duke and UNC both down. Duke possibly or currently being projected to miss the tournament.
You could say Kentucky too.
We could. Look,
we can say it on this one for sure. 1960. It's been a long time since those three haven't been very good.
Whatever you, Kentucky is trash. How about that?
Yep.
To all the Louisville fans listening, Kentucky's terrible. I know it makes you smile. How would you describe the league so far this year? Do you even have a hold on it yet, really?
It's been crazy, honestly. I think that we're looking kind of smart because we did say Virginia at the top, and the way they've looked in the last couple weeks has been so impressive. I know people were fired up that your Tigers would give them a run, and it certainly was Virginia's most complete performance. It was a matchup problem in a couple of different spots, and Virginia shot the ball so well. But, you know, you take out, I'm going to have to do some research on this, but I would imagine you take out that Gonzaga loss and their stats are incredible on the defensive end, on the offensive end. They've been awesome. And maybe that's the wake up call that a lot of teams around the ACC need. And who hasn't had one of those losses, you know, either a blowout loss or just a bad loss to a team you shouldn't in this kind of crazy year with all the breaks and, you know, young guys not getting the same reps. So I think Florida State and Virginia have started to separate themselves. It's crazy to think we're really like a third of the way through the season at, you know, some of these teams, 12, 13, 14 games. But then there's that second tier that is going to be super interesting to watch. And it, you know, could it be Pittsburgh? Could it be Clemson? Could it be Louisville? Could it be Duke? Could it be UNC, Georgia Tech? There's a lot of names in there that are kind of starting to maybe figure it out. And who's going the right direction, who's going the wrong direction is going to be awesome to watch. But to say you got your hands around this crazy season, I think you'd be nuts to try and put that out there. I think I know a little about basketball, and I'm not certainly not claiming that.
you're either nuts or a liar. I mean, that's the case. It's nuts to see how this season is going. Obviously, you know Louisville very well, and we know they're dealing with some injuries, not having Malik Williams. But what do you need to see from Louisville to improve? And I guess really, what's their season when Williams or ceiling when Williams gets back?
Yeah, I don't think they have anybody that is a good floor spacer for them. You know, they need one of us three to step in there and be able to knock down the corner open ones. Harley Jones and David Johnson, you know, I think that's the best backcourt in the ACC. You know, there's a lot of young guys, young backcourts in the ACC when you look at Duke and UNC. There's some other good ones. You know, I think Pittsburgh's is tough. I think Virginia's is good. Kihei Clark, obviously, pretty good. Florida State has MJ Walker. And, you know, once they get healthy, Scotty Barnes, that's a pretty good one. But up until this last few days, I mean, they were the best. And I didn't think there was much of an argument there. Those guys have been playing so well. And Karlik, you know, potential player of the year kind of years to that point. And he's still playing good. He's putting up good numbers. But who's going to help them out, especially at the three and the four spot? In terms of just Louisville, like, this is the second youngest team in the ACC. And if they didn't get Karlik Jones, they would be the youngest by far. It's a bunch of freshmen and sophomores out there. Jalen Withers is playing well, but they need somebody at the 3-4 to knock down some shots, to continue to rebound, to play bigger than they are. Because right now you're starting a 6'8 center that's a freshman, and you're starting a 6'7 freshman at the 4 spot, and you're starting a 6'5 freshman at the 3 spot. And so you're playing the ACC. This is some of the best basketball in the country. I know maybe it's a little bit of a down year. The Big Ten looks really really good this year, but you're still playing in the ACC, and battle scars help you in the ACC. Old guys help you in the ACC, and they need somebody else to start to piece together this puzzle. Could it be Charles Midland, the transfer from San Francisco? Yeah, like, he does a little bit of everything. He's had huge games against Gonzaga in that conference, but I think if this team is fully healthy, they have a chance to be as good as anybody in the league. The way they're at now, you got to fight your way into the top half of the league, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that, Luke. And I think you make a good point about not having a floor spacer there. And then with the youth, you know, we're seeing a lot of teams, not just in the ACC, but in the country. The better teams in the country right now are older teams. It just seems to be a year where that's really benefiting, whether it's a combo of COVID and this one-and-done class not being as great. I don't know exactly what the combination is there, but experience definitely helps. Speaking of older teams, Florida State and Virginia, they've each looked really, really good. I think they're the two best teams in the league right now. If you had to pick a favorite to go on and win the regular season right now between FSU and UVA, which one would you go with?
Man, it is an incredibly tough question at this point, obviously. I would give the nod to Virginia because, you know, I'm not betting against Tony Bennett with the track record he's done in the last decade in the ACC. He got a lot of championships. Now, that being said, the reigning champs still in Tallahassee. And so I like MJ Walker. I love Scotty Barnes. I love Raekwon Gray. I think they just have so many pieces to the puzzle. And when you look at their individuals, the versatility of every guy is incredible to me. They can really pressure you on the defensive end. But Virginia's a team that doesn't turn the ball over, that is playing a different level of offense than you saw last year, that has some pieces to the puzzle that are very convincing. You know, Jay Huff, when you look at his plus minus on the season, he has been a huge differentiator. The fact that your 7'1" center can pump fake at the 3-point line and see somebody jump, put the ball on the floor and create an opportunity for somebody else in that 5-out, nobody in, you know, paint wide open system, it's super impressive. And like, Tony Bennett's done the mover blocker system forever, and now he's got this different lineup and he's starting to tweak it. He's starting to figure it out. Maybe not exactly what he wants to do, but he's got a lot of pieces to the puzzle. They keep shooting the ball well. You know, I really like it. And I get it, they're not the number one defensive team in the country the way they've been the last 3 or 4 years. But again, outside of Gonzaga, they're there. I mean, they're as good as Clemson is in terms of their metrics outside of that game. And Clemson outside of UVA. So I think Virginia, but it's 1-1A right now.
I agree with you. And I think those are two teams that, as you just kind of spelled out, are figuring their selves out. The coaches are figuring out the new personnel. The players are figuring out their roles. Obviously, getting guys back healthy and just being there is important. So I'm excited. I hope we get to finish the way that we're supposed to and the way that things are kind of lining up, because I think a championship game between FSU and Virginia would just be an all-time great. So with that said, we've kind of got the team. You've identified Virginia, and I agree with you, as kind of the favorite. What about ACC Player of the Year? Because my boy from Pitt, Champagne, we've talked about him so much on this podcast. He's very unique as a player and what he's able to do, his skill set, which again, kind of similar to those two teams, kind of figuring out and getting better and better. He's my favorite, but I want to hear your favorite for ACC Player of the Year.
Yeah, I was looking at Carly Jones. I was looking at Matthew Hurt. To me, it's Justin Champagne. You know, this guy off the break, especially to come back and just try. He's trying to put everybody on sports. Right. He's trying to make posters out
every
there,
night.
This guy. It's incredible. And you see what he saw, what he did against Duke and the numbers that he put up. You know, Jalen Johnson played great, but he couldn't do a whole lot with Justin Champagne. He's physical. Again, he's got the battle scars. If Justin Champagne is going to come down in transition, shooting catch and shoot threes like that, be able to stretch the defense like that, he's just got a different set of skills than anybody else in this league is working with. You know, Matthew Hurt can play inside out, but he can't keep up with him on the perimeter. The guy is fearless, going to get the basketball in terms of a rebounder. Already had a 20-20 game. I think his stats are like the only player to do that, or the last player to do that, is Tim Duncan. I mean, what this guy's doing is on another level. I love his game, and I think Pitt's going to really surprise people. Where would we be talking about Pittsburgh if they weren't down three of their key players and a head coach against Louisville? Because I will tell you this, if Louisville played Pitt today, I got Pitt. So if Pitt's 5-0 instead of 4-1, and they've only lost one game on the year, and St. Francis, which is super weird, it was their first game of the year in a crazy season, right? But I think Pitt can be a top four team in this league, and that's where you look at, like, who is overachieving, who's really knocked away expectations where you're like, man, this dude has been awesome this year. And that's Justin Champagne to me.
He's been great. Speaking of ACC Players of the Year, Dana Evans at Louisville is electric. I know you follow the women's team in Louisville. Everyone does, because they're so dang good. And I know you talk with Jeff Walls on your radio show. So what are your thoughts on the Louisville women being number one in the country for the first time ever in the AP poll? It really surprised me that had never happened before.
I was shocked. We had Jeff Walls. He had put a little video out about his top five players, and he started with Monique Reed, and then he went into all the usuals, you know, Maisha Hines-Allen and Asia Durr, Shoni Schimmel, Angel McGodry. And I was just like, that kind of talent, you haven't been number one, is absolutely incredible. He told a funny story. When we won the championship in 2013, they were at the Final Four in New Orleans. And the shot that I will never forget is Shoni Schimmel, like, over her head. Brittany Griner's, like, tackling her. And she makes this shot. It's
iconic.
It's awesome. So we kind of reminisced about 2013 and some of their great years. And then to think, like, they're starting two freshmen, and they're number one in the country. All the hype was around Haley Van Lith, but he told us early on, Olivia Cochran's going to be the difference maker. And the fact that she's a high basketball IQ, she can score with her back to the basket, she's got great hands. Like, he kind of went into all this early on, and man, as she answered the call. You know about Dana Evans going from Sixth Woman of the Year to Player of the Year. The battles between her and Haley Van Lith, like, I can't imagine, you know, in practice. But they've got so much versatility. There's a ton of other pieces to the puzzle there. It's crazy that this is the first time they've been number one, but you know, to me, they're obviously going to compete in the ACC. They're very deserving of number one in the country. I've always thought with Jeff Walls, it's just a matter of time. He stays at Louisville. He sticks to what he's doing. They're going to win a national championship. It's just a matter of time. And this is one of his best chances. And again, it's crazy to think two freshmen in that starting five.
Crazy. And HVL gets all the pub. And rightfully so. I mean, she's incredible. But Olivia Cochran is a baller. To start at the five as a freshman in the ACC, it's almost unheard of. Luke, you are truly a renaissance man. You can talk about anything. You've got stories for days. We appreciate you joining us. We'll have to have you on again, because I feel like you've got more stories that you could tell us too.
My Twitter bio, washed up athlete with some good stories. So hopefully that played true today.
That's it from our Traeger Grills Guest of the Week. Guys, listen, I know that segment makes you hungry. You hear about Traeger on the front end. Now you're hearing it on the back end. Do yourself a favor. go buy a Traeger grill. And once you do, download the Traeger app or find them on social media at Traeger Grills. Listen, they are always posting great recipes, great ideas for inspiration. Kelly, honestly, I find myself looking at Instagram, looking at the Traeger app, and just dreaming about what I'm going to grill up next on my 885 Ironwood. But that's enough about that. Let's get to our ACC of the week, brought to you by Sunshine. Kelly, start us off with your athlete.
Okay, my athlete of the week. It's so weird, Mac. I didn't plan this out, but last week, my athlete of the week was a Wake Forest women's basketball player. And I'm not a Wake homer. I love Wake the right amount, you know? I love Wake as much as the next person.
I see a gold kind of top hat you're wearing right now. It kind of looks like Wake Forest.
I stole that from Packer. Forgot to tell you about that. But my ACC of the week, my athlete of the week, is Gina Conti, Wake Forest point guard. Mac, she was unconscious. We were talking to Luke about that feeling when you just can't miss. She made 8 threes last Thursday at Notre Dame, and then she also scored in double figures and hit 2 threes in their win over Virginia Tech. So 10 threes in a week. She was 10 for 16 from beyond the arc. Incredibly impressive. Gina Conti, my athlete of the week.
It reminds me of a young Kelly Gramlich out there just filling it up from the three-point line. My athlete of the week, and you could probably have guessed this because you hear how much I just glow over this guy, is pit forward Justin Champagny. Listen, 6 foot six, 200-pound forward. That's a little bit undersized, guys, but he led Pitt to an unbelievable victory over Duke, and he casually just put up 31 points, shooting 80% from field goal, 57% from three. I mean, you're feeling it when you're hitting numbers like that. He also had 14 rebounds, 5 blocks, 2 steals, impacted every inch of the basketball court. Champagny, my athlete of the week.
Mac, he is definitely, he's your favorite hooper right now, right?
I mean, I can just totally what tell. He does and how he does it. I mean, again, undersized guy, flicks it from anywhere, goes and gets rebounds. He'll dunk on you in a second. He's just a lot of fun to watch.
He is. I completely agree. All right, my coach of the week, the C in our ACC, is Leonard Hamilton, the head coach at Florida State. When you look back at what they have done over the past week, where they were coming off of a COVID pause, they beat NC State, they blew them out. They beat North Carolina at home, and then on Monday night, quick two-day turnaround, they beat Louisville in Louisville and blew them out of the gym. Luke brings up their versatility. It's truly mind-blowing to see what all those guys can do on the floor and how every single one of them can shoot the three, attack the basket, guard the ball. It's just incredible. So Leonard Hamilton, for keeping his team focused during that COVID pause and then coming back stronger than almost anyone thought they would be.
Yeah, I love that pick. And I think, again, FSU rising very quickly. My coach of the week, it kind of goes with my athlete, and this is now two in a row here for me a little bit. I'm going with Coach Jeff Capel. How about this, guys, from Pitt? He is the first Coach K player to ever defeat Coach K in a basketball game. That's remarkable to see. It's kind of ironic a little bit the paths that Coach Capel and I have crossed over. He's from Hope Mills, North Carolina. That's where I went to high school, in the city of Hope Mills. He actually led his team to a state championship there. So he was a big hometown hero, and I knew all about Coach Jeff Capel growing up. So he is my coach of the week.
That is excellent. And the stat, he was the first player, because Mike Bray has beaten Coach K, but Mike Bray didn't play for Coach K.
That's
he
right.
Just coached with Coach K. So excellent stat. My craziness of the week is what we talked about with Luke, the Louisville women, number one in the country for the first time ever. It is truly mind-blowing that they have never been number one in the country. I could not believe it when I heard that, but very deserving as a number one team right now. They are going to play Syracuse tonight on ESPN2, so make sure you check it out. They're electric, super fun to watch, and pretty crazy. This is their first time being number one.
My crazy, I'm going to double scoop here with athlete, but the statistics are the crazy part here. Syracuse guard Priscilla Williams did not miss a shot against Miami the other night. 26 points. She was 9 for 9 from the field. 6 of those 9 were three-pointers. So it's just this podcast is just full of sharpshooters, Kelly, and I'm going to just keep mentioning it as soon and as often as I can. So my craziness, 100% from the field, Priscilla Williams from Syracuse.
And she was the ACC Rookie of the Week. Very deserving, I would say, Mac. That ACC of the week is brought to you by our friends at Sunshine Beverages. Feel good energy. It is the perfect pick-me-up. It sparkles with vitamins, electrolytes, and only 70 milligrams of natural caffeine that is sourced from organic green coffee beans. In delicious flavors like blueberry lemonade, clementine twist, and gingerberry, Sunshine offers a balanced boost with great taste and better-for-you ingredients. You guys can find Sunshine at your local Publix or visit drinkthesunshine.com and use our code ACC10 at checkout for 10% off your order. That's drinkthesunshine.com. Sunshine, feel good energy, and make sure you go vote in our Sunshine poll question of the week. We have one up right now that has to do a little bit with our guy, Justin Champagny.
That's right. It's been a great week. Another week of basketball. Excited for this weekend. Cannot wait to break it all down on Tuesday. Big thanks for Luke Hancock joining us on this episode. Guys, thanks for listening, obviously, as you always do. If you haven't already, go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop us a little 5-star rating, a little review. It's always fun to hear from you guys. But until next time, we'll see y'all.